Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening. Passing this morning comes from 1 Corinthians, and it's written by the follower named Paul. And Paul was quite a strident preacher. Matt will say more about that. I'll be reading from the 9th chapter, and I'm going to start at verse 16, and you can read along on the screen, or there are also Bibles in the pew. So let's hear these words from Paul. If I proclaim the gospel, this gives me no ground for boasting, for an obligation is laid on me, and woe to me if I do not proclaim the gospel. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if not of my own will, I am entrusted with a commission. What then is my reward? Just this: that in my proclamation I may make the gospel free of charge, so as not to make full use of my rights in the gospel. For though I am free with respect to all, I have made myself a slave to all, so that I might win more of them. To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, so that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that I might by all means save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, so that I may share in its blessings.
Some folks thought that it was totally crazy. They thought it was utterly insane to do this. See, everybody knows that a pulpit has its place in a sanctuary. That's actually, by definition, what a pulpit is. It's an elevated space that someone stands to preach during worship, right? And the place that you do that is right here in the walls of a sanctuary. Well, way back then, folks thought it was crazy because what started to happen was that pulpit started to show up out in the fields. And that wasn't right. It didn't make any sense that a pulpit would go out to the fields. Field preaching is what they started to call it. And everybody thought it was crazy. At least everybody that gathered in those sanctuaries thought it was crazy. See, what happened when the pulpit ended up in the field was that everybody wanted to go see what was going on. They'd never seen this before. Like, on the side of a street in the middle of town, a preacher would stand up and start to share good news. And then out in a field on the edge of town, a preacher would show up and do what preachers do, share good news, and more folks started to go there. The first guy that did it, at least on my reading, is this guy named Mr. Whitefield. And when John Wesley heard that he was doing this, Wesley, like everybody else in the pews, thought this guy was crazy. See, Wesley knew church inside and out. He was a preacher's kid. He knew what was supposed to happen and how it was supposed to happen. It didn't make any sense to him that somebody would take the pulpit out to the field. But what happened when the pulpit turned up in the field was something like this. All kinds of folks started gathering there. Not just folks in their nice Sunday clothes, folks that had bathed that morning and were ready for what was going to happen, but all kinds of folks, folks that had been working so long in the field that they hadn't had any time to take a bath. Folks that had been in the bottle for so long that they couldn't remember the last time they had a bath. All those folks started coming to church, not here, but out there. And Wesley saw it for himself in 1739, and he journaled about it. And then 3 days later, he found the chutzpah to try it. He said, I'm going to go out there and do something vile. And he started, and that day, he writes down that 3,000 people showed up. See, I think mostly they just wanted to see what the heck was going on, because that's not right. That's not normal. Let's go see what's happening out in that space. And that's what they did. And it was all kinds of folks. Folks you want sitting next to you and folks that you're glad it's the open air. They were all there. See, good church folks knew that this was crazy. They knew that God's rhythm only beats in the sanctuary. That's why we go there on Sunday mornings. They knew that God's dancing reverberated there, but it couldn't go out beyond those walls. There was trouble that was there. See, Mr. Whitefield had taken God's beat out to the streets, and folks didn't quite know what to do with that. How could the pristine good news of God's grace be shared out there in those vile places? And folks in the Methodist movement started to question Wesley because he actually thought, this stuff works. Let's go out and try this. Not only did he think, let's go try this, he actually set aside for a year and a half. I learned this week. He set an entire year and a half. He decided, we're not going to try to gather people into bands or small groups to watch over each other in love. This preaching the fields thing, this is really working. Let's just keep doing it. And he realized that there's more to growing in faith than just gathering big groups, but he was pretty convinced that there was a way here. And to the folks that started to doubt him, that started to question him, he said this to them, I wonder at those who still talk so loud of the indecency of field preaching. The highest indecency is in St. Paul's church, when a considerable part of the congregation are asleep or talking or looking about, not minding a word the preacher says. That never happens. Must have happened to Wesley. Maybe he got better preaching when he went outside. I don't know. There might be something to that. But some folks, everybody actually, had to discern for themselves, what are we going to do, right? What are we going to do? Are we going to preach good news here in the sanctuary and wait for folks to show up? Or are we going to recognize that all kinds of people out in the world who need to hear good news are not going to walk in our doors if our preachers, even if they're sharing the most angelic messages you can fathom, if the people aren't coming in, does it really, really matter? Does a tree fall? Can you hear? Everybody knows that? Yeah. What do we do then? What are we going to do? And it wasn't like it was easy for Wesley. He didn't like it much. The way he said it was this, to this day, field preaching is a cross to me. But I know my commission, and I see no other way of preaching the gospel to every creature, to all kinds of folks. And it made me wonder this week, when have we felt that kind of conviction? Like, I don't want to do this, but I can't stop doing this. I can't but follow in this way. See, field preaching in the day was radical because everybody knows the pulpit, well, it was supposed to be here, we moved it, but pulpits are supposed to be right here in the sanctuary. Everybody knows that. But when it went outside, people started to wonder. And Whitefield and others could look to the Bible and they could say, Jesus, he gave this sermon called the Sermon on the Mount. Like, it's hard to get more biblical than preaching outdoors when that's what Jesus does first, right? But no one had followed that way of Jesus. What they had done was built buildings to worship God. And that's important as well, but it was pretty biblical to say, let's go out to the fields and set up a pulpit and see who gathers. That's the way that Jesus had led. But folks in the church resisted. Most resisted. We can't stoop to that level. We're not going to be all things to all those people, right? We're not going to do that, are we? They had to discern in their own hearts, is this God calling them out of the safety and security of what they've known to follow a new way? Or is it, like a lot of people thought, craziness? Because for sure, if they do it, they're going to be called names. They're going to be looked down upon. They're going to be associated with the all kinds of folks that keep showing up to things like that. And people will not be happy about it. This wasn't unlike what was happening in Corinth when Paul was writing to the folks there. See, they were in deep disagreement about how to follow Jesus. They were trying to discern in their own hearts, what is the best way to do this? And I believe that they desired at the depth of their beings to root their lives in grace, to grow in faith, and to reach in love. But what happens when we gather together as people is we think, these other folks just don't quite do it the way that we should do it. And then we start to say that. See, their issue was about food. And how do you properly slaughter animals? And then what meats can you eat and what meats can't you eat? And we might look back at that so many generations later and think, that's really what they were, that was it. That was what they were fighting about. That seems pretty crazy. That's what we were fighting about. Is this meat okay or is this meat not okay? But then I wonder about it and I think, myself included, I was vegetarian for 11 years. We can fight about some of those things in our day as well. And it makes me wonder, like, what kinds of things are we fighting about right now among ourselves that a couple hundred years from now, folks are going to think, really? You were divided about that? Like, how many things do we hold with such conflictedness right now that are going to just fall away? See, Paul was kind of paving the way for field preaching. Paul says it this way to the folks in Corinth, I have become all things to all people that I might by all means save some. In other words, I'm taking the pulpit outside on Sunday mornings and I'm talking to everybody that's out there and all kinds of folks are showing up. Whatever it takes to connect with people. To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law so that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as an outsider of the law so that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak so that I might win the weak. Some of that's perplexing, and we think about that, and we're not quite sure what's happening in first century Corinth to make sense of all of those details of where we are in this. And some folks are tempted to think, well, Paul is a great 21st century liberal. Everything goes. Do whatever you want. Woohoo! Paul could not have been further from meaning that just everything goes. That's not where Paul was trying to take folks. What Paul deeply believed was that you have some idiosyncrasies. I do. Some of the ways that I am in the world probably annoy some people who I love. It's possible. It's at least possible. And what Paul is saying is try to limit those things so that you don't prevent other folks from knowing God's love because you can be a pain. I think that's the crux of what Paul is trying to say. Help yourself get out of the way so that other folks can recognize God's love, God's hope through you. Nothing more than that, nothing less. That's the thrust of his message. He wants to accommodate himself to the people around him so that they can root their lives in grace, grow in faith, and reach in love. And the folks there in Corinth, they had to discern. Where are we going to go with this? Are we going to follow Paul's writing, his letter, and let go of some of the anger that we have toward one another? Or are we going to stay right where we are, convicted and convinced in how it should be and what's right? See, communities don't exist in theory. If they did exist in theory, it would be beautiful because we could all just be on one page. But communities are made up of folks with flesh and bones, folks who have their own ideas, and folks who get caught up in our own egos, and folks who struggle with one another. That's what community is. How could it really be any different, actually? I'm not certain that it ever could be different, but what I know is that Paul offers some guidance about where to go with that. And he says this: put your own self aside for a moment. Make yourself available to those who are around you. And maybe what he says that's most important is this: there are folks around in our community who are weaker than others in particular ways. And the tendency is to just keep going right past them. But what Paul says is, and he does it around food, help yourself recognize where they are so that you can nurture the folks who are most in need. It's like if you know that it doesn't matter how this meat was prepared, you know that doesn't matter to God. But for some folks, they can't get over that. So go with them, walk alongside them, and help nurture people. That's how change happens in our lives. Walk alongside and nurture those folks. And he sets up this paradox of freedom and indebtedness, strength and weakness. And Paul always calls us into those hard places. They're difficult tensions. God's call in our life, and how do we respond? How do we respond with others who need us in this space? See, in the end, Paul does not imagine that the unity of Christians is really about our faith at all. He imagines that it's actually about what God is doing in and through us in Jesus. That God is already uniting us together, is moving in us and through us. And he's writing to remind folks that Jesus has already made this real if we'd only let go of some of the ways we block it. So Paul positions himself. It's probably impossible for him to do it any other way. He was one of the founders there, so he's positioning himself as an authority in this church community. And folks are looking to him, and that can be dangerous. It can be dangerous when folks think that they're following Jesus, and they're really moving into kind of a celebrity leadership style. We talked about this the last 2 weeks, and I think it's always a danger in every community that we find ourselves. How do we as people of faith discern where Jesus, where God is calling us? Not giving over our authority that someone else can kind of drag us along, but how do we discern that as individuals in community? There's a church that's been on the front page of Slate all week long. Maybe some of you have seen it. Mars Hill Church in Seattle. I'm just curious, is that a familiar thing? Nobody. Some of us. The pastor there, his name is Mark Driscoll, and he's a controversial pastor of what's become, over the last 10 or 15 years, a megachurch. It started out in his apartment 15 years ago or so with a handful of folks, and they worship with about 7,000 people now in multiple campuses all around in Seattle. His style is edgy, I think it's fair to say. He's very controversial. You might think of him as a 21st century field preacher. Like, this guy wants to go out to the folks that are not going to come into the door of a church ever. That's who he spends time with. One of the things that they brag about, or other people brag about, I don't know if they do, I think they do, is that we have four of the best tattoo artists in Seattle, and they celebrate that that's where we are, and we celebrate the arts too. I'd love to have tattoo artists here, actually. Not me first. I'll follow. Who's ready? So in this space, conservatives get really concerned around Mark Driscoll because he cusses a lot, and he does that from the pulpit. I think he does that. Not even going to go there, but he does that a lot. And it throws people off because they think you cannot be following Jesus if that's how you talk. Okay? And then liberals get really upset with him as well because much of what he says is blatantly misogynist. That's just true. It's how he writes. It's how he is. And still, 7,000 folks or so, give or take, have discerned, we're going to follow Jesus with this guy. This is where we're going to go. And he and his wife have a book out recently about real marriage. I think that's the title of it. And I want to say he would not like that Linda is a pastor. He would definitely think that I'm part of the group of folks who have sissified Jesus and made Jesus not the masculine. That got some laughs. I agree. not the masculine WWFE, whatever the language is nowadays, mixed martial art Jesus that he really was. And that's what Mark, that's how and what Mark preaches. And he does it in really provocative ways. And over the last 2 years, stories have started to leak about people within his community who have been brought up on what they identify as charges, and they've been put under discipline and shunned by the community. And the small group of folks that they're with are told, you cannot interact with this person because they've sinned. And most often the sin is related to sexual immorality, but oftentimes what we are learning is that the sin is about questioning. Questioning whether certain decisions are putting more and more power in one person's hands versus inviting a congregation to discern how God is calling them in that space. And those are tensions that all communities live in, and they're making certain decisions. But I want to share this story because, for one, I think it's important for us to go on record and to say that church and following can be really, really dangerous, and not in a dangerous cross to new life kind of way, but in like a Jim Jones kind of a way. And I just want to pause for that, because that's real and it's true. And maybe folks in our own room right now in this sanctuary have experienced that kind of call or that kind of Christianity. And I think it can be really hard to untangle ourselves from that when we mm-hmm. do find ourselves in it. Our question, though, the questions for folks there in Seattle, it's how are we discerning how to follow Jesus? And it is a really, really hard question. See, Jesus doesn't say, go out by yourself and stand on the moral high ground of individualism and look down on everybody. Jesus doesn't say, leave everybody behind and go it alone. Jesus sends folks out in twos to go door to door, and then to build community together. Jesus did things like go out into the field to preach good news to the poor, and then gather them together. It's a dangerous way, inevitably, but not in the same way, I don't think. It can be a way that is very hard to discern where we're going. And I want to say in this community, especially as we talk about followership, what we're talking about is how do we follow Jesus? And oftentimes we can get caught up in following celebrities, which isn't faithful followership at all. It's actually just being dragged along like the rest of society into dangerous places. And our question, our challenge this morning is as folks who are inevitably following followers, like we just come after. So therefore, we're always following kind of through the lens of other folks who've gone before us. We've been showing a video in here, and many of us have seen it. It's a video that tries to turn leadership upside down, and it shows a dancing man. I won't do it, but it's a dancing man out in a field, and he, maybe I could do it, and we could see who would be my first followers. He starts to dance in this field, and a couple folks start to follow him. And then more and more people start to follow him. And by the end of this video, you see just a crowd of people following. And what I wonder about is this. Those folks who've come in towards the end, they're all dancing, 100 people there together. can they really see the one who was leading initially? Like, they might see a glimpse of him now and then, or you might see what you think is the leader, but for the most part, you're seeing a lot of legs and arms and bodies. You're bumping into things. That's what followership is actually like, though. You're trying to look through to see where the leader is calling you, and you both need those folks, because otherwise you're just a lone nut dancing out there by yourself, and the folks are also inhibiting the way that you go. And guess what that means? It means you're inhibiting the way that other people dance too. It's never a one-way street. We're always in community, together, in relationship, in hard and complicated ways, and we try to do that here at the table at Central by rooting our lives in grace, by coming back every week to the message that God's love is for all. Remember that, those fields when all kinds of folks started to show up, the ones that you're glad, the open air? That's God's love right there for those folks. And we do that by recognizing that we can't just trust in that rootedness, because God actually longs for us to grow, to dance better. And I've got a long ways to go in my dancing. Maybe you do too. The way that we do that is by practicing, by trying it out with folks who aren't afraid to give us some space, that aren't afraid to give us some ways that it's worked for them. Folks that aren't afraid to dance alongside of us and aren't judging us when we're not quite in step. But folks who are willing to be out there with us, dancing together, and it's going to take for us a willingness to try to keep looking through for those moments of the leader who's out there, up there, in front of us, calling us. And it's going to take us looking around to see who's dancing with us and what am I doing that might be getting in their way, like Paul was asking his folks. It's going to take, how might I kind of try out what she's been trying out? It works for her. And sometimes in dancing, you'll learn that what works for someone else may or may not work for you. But it's a motion. It's a move. And what we call that is the body of Christ. When folks start to dance together, we call that the body of Christ. We call that God. We call it church. See, we get confused sometimes that the church can be a building that holds, but the church is God's body out in the world where all means all, and then we grow in faith together. And then it's in that process of rooting our lives in grace and growing in faith that through that, we can't but reach in love. That's all we can do. That's all we are. See, Whitefield had to discern how to follow Jesus out from the safety of what he'd known into the unknown of those fields. And then folks around him had to discern, is he a lone nut or are we going to be first followers? And then Paul had to discern, how am I going to help these folks who are conflicted and infighting find their way in God's world? And then they had to discern, how am I going to find my way? And folks in Seattle and all around the world who turn into Mars Hill on podcast, they have to discern too. How are we going to follow Jesus? What's following and what's celebrity leadership and how do we discern the difference? Because guess what? We have to discern it too. This day and every day, how are we going to follow God? Is the pulpit going to stay right where it's been? Or is the pulpit going to go out to the field? And when it does, and when God's rhythm and God's beat starts to move out there, what are we going to do with it? Are we going to walk away? Are we going to start to dance by ourselves in such a way that no one else can dance with us? Are we going to keep looking for that leader who's trying to show us some moves? And then make space for other folks to move with us. And if we can do that, can we trust that we too are part of the body of Christ that is bringing grace and hope and love into every part of every field? Amen.
I am a pilgrim and a stranger traveling through this worrisome land. I got a home built in that yonder city, good Lord, and it's not made by hand.